this edition of Chiefs Live. Mitch Holtis with you, the voice, along with the 15-year NFL veteran, Pro Bowl long snapper Kendall Gammon. Got to keep it real in the stadium.
We're in the clouds. We're up high.
Yes. And, yes, the Whiteman Air Force Base, there will be a flyover sometime during the broadcast, and they'll be below us, actually. But you also got to get the stadium feel.
Absolutely.
Because it kind of gets the blood boiling a little bit, and being back in this thing and waiting for that home opener. The two preseason games, of course, including the San Francisco 49ers, which will be kind of fun, and the Green Bay Packers coming here, and then the in-season home opener against the Dallas Cowboys the second week of the regular season. But over the next several weeks, we want to kind of take a different approach. This is a rookie minicamp week, so we're excited to see them get on the field tomorrow and through the weekend. But kind of your thoughts on a position-by-position breakdown of where this team is. We'll start with the offense today. But just kind of a global feeling about offense, this team and the roster, and where the position battles might be.
Well, certainly the offense, we know it's no secret. They have to get better, and that starts with the QB position. And certainly the Chiefs did that this offseason when they go out and get Alex Smith. Mitch, as I see it, the Chiefs have five starters in place, and then there's six spots up for grabs. And you can say a seventh if you want to decide on that third wide receiver in the slot and how you're dealing with that. But when you look at Alex Smith, you look at Jamal Charles, you look at Eric Fisher, of course, Brandon Albert, and then Dwayne Bowe. Those are the five that I see that are solidly in there. There's others that are on the team, but where they fit in, we don't know. But certainly the discussion we're going to have today is about the battles going on. But those are the five starters I see right now.
All right, let's just go take those five before we get into go position by position on the offense and look at those five at their skill set, what they bring to the 2013 Kansas City Chiefs. But then let's also look at areas where if you want each of these five to go to the next level, what kind of has to happen. Let's start with Alex Smith. I'm excited about this guy. I tweeted out earlier this week, it was his birthday, and I celebrated by watching highlights of the comeback playoff victory against New Orleans, which is one of the best playoff comebacks in recent years. But Alex Smith, what does he bring to the team?
Alex Smith, first and foremost, brings stability to the position, I believe. He was playing well last year. It was an odd situation last year that you don't find yourself in very often when you're playing at such a high level, and then somebody comes in and they basically, in the middle of the year, for lack of a better word, scrap the offense and go in a different direction. I mean, he was throwing over 70% completion. He was doing some good things. But I think with Alex, you're going to see him given a lot of freedom to make decisions, to go up the line and figure out and make those decisions quickly. And I think Coach Reed will have confidence in him to do that. I think he's good at delivering the ball on time where it needs to be and understanding where he needs to go with the ball. And then when we get to that, the biggest thing from the QB standpoint is ball security. Hold on to the ball.
Yeah, and we've said this last year, the Chiefs hemorrhage turnovers at record levels. The other thing I've noticed with Alex Smith, just being around him some, and I'm looking forward to being around him more, is he's got that it factor. He's got that persona factor. And you've been around quarterbacks in this league for a long time. When you're around him, you get the sense this is a winning starting quarterback in the locker room.
Yeah, and I'll just dovetail with that in the fact that you're not taking number one overall as a QB if you don't have that it factor. And Coach Reed is, I think he's talked about it in a little length, that he's liked him for quite some time. And he's somebody that he thought could play. So it wasn't surprising when you came here and they made the moves to get him. It's from the QB position, certainly an upgrade.
Yeah, again, Andy's relationship with Alex goes all the way back when Alex was the University of Utah, and his head coach was very tight with Andy Reid. So Andy's followed Alex's career all the way back to the time when he was in Salt Lake City. Now, to keep with this theme, though, let's talk about, in your opinion, for Alex to go to the next level. And to me, the next level, obviously, is winning a playoff game
right here.
It hasn't happened in two decades. What has to happen?
Well, I think, again, he has to show that leadership. You just talked about the it factor. He has to lead. Naturally, the QB is the leader of the team. It's just how it falls. My 15 years, it was always the QB you look to. And in teams that falter, normally that QB just doesn't have it to a degree. Now, he has to perform on the field as well. But it's that it factor you talked about. But I'm going to keep going to the fact that he's got to get the ball where it needs to be on time, get it to the playmakers, let them make plays. And again, I'm going to go back to it, is ball security. If he does that, the Chiefs looking for some good things in 2013.
Yeah, and the other goal here for Alex Smith, of course, is to replicate what he's done the past 2 years, because it's been at a winning playoff level of football if you look at the 12 and 11 seasons. But I would say also to stay healthy. If you look at Alex, there have been some issues throughout his career. The concussion last year, obviously, that opened the door for Kaepernick, or made the decision for Harbaugh. Not easy, but what, at least opened the door for Jim's decision to do that. But I'm excited about Alex Smith quarterbacking this team. I think he can be a winning playoff quarterback. He's proven. I think he can do it here, and hopefully he'll be able to do it in 2013. All right, let's move on. Let's go to Jamaal Charles. Now, what he did last year cannot be overstated. To put up the numbers he put up last year in a 2-14, running the ball just doesn't happen. Those numbers right. just don't mix on a 2-14 team. What he did last year was borderline phenomenal.
It was, and if it wasn't for that guy up in Minnesota doing what he did, which was an unbelievable year also, you'd have even more talk about Jamaal Charles, I think. Number 25 did a fabulous job. You're going to ask the question, what does he need to do this year? I think he's going to have to concentrate, and he does it well, but I think he's going to be catching the ball out of the backfield a lot. I think that's a huge staple of this offense that Andy Reid has brought to the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's huge. When you put a guy with world-class speed out in space with people, good things happen. I say it all the time about people like him. Growing up, playing not it, he was never it. This guy is fast. He gets there before he gets there, but he has to stay healthy. And to do that, I think you have to take some of the load carry-wise off of him. You would certainly like to take it off in the beginning of the season so he's got fresh legs towards the end.
This will be an offense, I think, built on efficiency and also ball security, but I'm with you in the passing game. There have got to be explosive plays come from somewhere, and not just base run plays like Jamaal has proven. The passing game, if he can be consistent in how he runs his routes, even if it's just a swing pass check down play, because now he's got a quarterback who's going to put the ball in the right position for him to catch it and explode. Those become explosive plays in terror for a linebacker and safety.
You're right, and you said the key word is putting the ball in position for him to catch it in stride and run. That goes back, or rather get it in stride. That goes back to Alex Smith and what he does. That flows into allowing Jamaal to do that. Catch the ball in stride, make big plays. We both know, you know it, you talk about it all the time on the broadcast. The NFL is made up of chunks. You've got to get chunks in this league. You cannot have 12, 14 play drives all the time. It just doesn't happen.
The other thing, obviously, with Jamaal is ball security. Let's be honest. Love Jamaal now, but 5 fumbles last year and he lost 3. Even saw it at camp. We saw it in the preseason. That ball now with Andy Reid. Andy Reid said it last week, I don't like fumbles. And Andy lived through a life last year where the Eagles led the National Football League and lost fumbles. He wants that football sewn to the ventricles of Jamaal's heart. And he can sprint into the end zone and high-five KC Wolf, but you got to have the ball across the goal line. So ball security is a big issue.
Exactly right. You have got to hold on to the ball, like you said. Coach Reid doesn't like it. Nobody likes it because bad things happen. Because now it snowballs and it puts your defense in a bad position as well, besides taking points off the board potentially. So we saw what it's like last year when you don't hold on to the ball. It's got to change this year.
Again, we're focusing on offense on this edition of Chiefs Live and kind of looking at position to position. Kendall has targeted, he thinks there's 5 starters right now going into the May, June part of the summer. And the third guy that you penned in, in a starting position is Eric Fisher. Now, what's come up with Andy Reid's discussion over the past several days is people have got to get ready maybe for Fisher to be a right tackle. Eric Fisher, what's he bring to the table?
You know what, he's nasty, and watching his film, he has a defensive lineman's attitude in an offensive lineman, and coaches love that about him. But this is a guy at 6'7", 310. Mitch, he's just wildly athletic. I mean, the guy can bend his knees, he can get into it. He's a team player. I like his intensity. When you see him on some of those vignettes on the NFL Network of him slapping hands as people come out, this is a guy that is intense. You can tell he loves the game, and he's excited about it. He hasn't made any bones about how excited he is to be here in Kansas City. Certainly, you go into the fact of he's a number one pick. He's the 1-1 pick. You're thinking left tackle. That's what he played. But with the situation that's here as we speak right now, he may be playing right tackle. I'm going to tell you right now, there's worse things that you could have than 2 number one picks playing your left tackle and your right tackle. So it is good. He can run block, and he's an excellent pass blocker.
Yeah, I like the fact that and this offense is going to be more multiple, I think, than people think. And even if they can go to big package, small package, we'll get that in a second. But he's a guy that can play big package, small package tackle.
Right.
Some guys get penciled in as pass blockers, not so much in run blocking. This guy looks like he can do it both. Now, we're in the same vein here, what he can do better. We don't have a baseline here in the NFL of what he can do. But the knock on him was he can be bull rush some. At least that's what coming out of the Senior Bowl. And there'll be some teams that'll probably test him, try to just run him over.
You know what? I think he'll be okay with that. From what I've seen, he bends his knees, and more importantly, he sinks his hips well, rather. If he gets his hands into the defender, those are some long arms he has, a long wingspan. That's why they measure you at the combine, to see how long those things are, so you can get the defenders out and away from you. I think he'll be okay with that. One thing that I think he brings to the game, which I like, is he's good getting to the second level. When I say second level, I mean getting up to the linebackers, so getting off the down block and maybe on the backside, getting a backside backer so he can't run to the ball and make the tackle from behind. Also, the sprint draw, it's a staple in the NFL. And when I talk about the sprint draw, Mitch, you know this, is the fact is you go back as a QB like you're going to pass, then you hand it underneath to the running back. Now, the tackle is pass setting, invites the defensive end upfield, and then he pops him by and he goes upfield. He basically gets two for one, and when you've got a guy 3'10", 6'7", running like he can run, Jamaal Charles is going to be a happy guy if he gets some of those sprint draws going. That can happen from either side.
Some of the best plays have been those kind of sprint draws to Brandon Albert's side. That specific play has become a staple for BA, and now we segue right into Brandon Albert. The discussion about trading him, trying to get him to the Dolphins, didn't work out to try to get the second-round draft pick back. Now, all of a sudden, a lot of the dialogue around One Arrowhead Drive is to hunker down, and Brandon Albert is the left tackle going in, with the very least, with the franchise tag, potentially with a longer-term deal. We showed the stats on Brandon Albert a couple of weeks ago on Chiefs Live. He had his best year last year.
Right.
One hold, I believe. There weren't false starts last year. He was more consistent. You've mentioned there's worse things than having these two guys at right left tackle. But when you think of Brandon Albert going into 2013, what do you think?
Well, you know what? I think John Dorsey explained it very well when he was up on stage in the draft with you and I. He said, make no mistake, Brandon Albert is a fine football player. He's one of the best players in this league. He's a great left tackle. All he's talked about was the fact of, as a general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm going to explore each and every option. And there was a lot of options explored from both sides. And what you've got now is he's still here. And the fact is, he does some good things. He didn't give up sacks. We know he's tough. He played last year in a lot of pain. Make no mistake about it. He dealt with some personal tragedy at the beginning of the year. This is a guy who's completely on his game.
Yeah, he's outstanding in that regard. Now, let's talk about for improvement here. For Brandon Albert to jump up and go to the next level, what does he have to do?
You know what? First of all, he has to stay healthy. Yeah. That's huge. And for a lot of different reasons. If he gets a long-term deal, certainly you want to stay healthy. The team's looking at it. If not, and he's only on the one-year deal, and it's just that, he's got to stay healthy for that as well. He's got every reason to play well. And the fact is, he is a team player. He's a good person. You've been around him even more than I have.
Yep.
But what does he have to do? Probably, I think if I'm going to look at anything, possibly be more physical in the run game. That being said, I'm kind of splitting hairs a little bit because I think he does a pretty good job. Pass-wise, I think he's done a good job. He's got to make sure and just shore up that left side if that's where he's at and make sure that Alex Smith has complete and total confidence that he can sit there and know that the blind side is protected and so he can deliver the ball like we talked about earlier on time.
I have high regard for Brandon Albert as a player and as a person. And I did see what he went through last year, but I'm with you. He must stay healthy. Only one season. He came into this league in 2008 as he played all 16 games. And for Brandon, like any guy of his size, it's a challenge in taking care of your body, managing your body, so to speak.
Right.
And that's going to be a challenge for BA from this point on. The other thing I would say, and this is where it gets a little bit difficult being the franchise tag, but get in here.
Right.
Be here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real tempo to this that's gone on with the OTAs, and you can just sense it. And going into the mini camp in June, get here. Don't be a three-week holdout in St. Joe.
Right.
That's just me, but
well,
that's what I'm hoping.
You're right. OTAs, mini camp, training camp, that's where you develop team chemistry. You don't develop it during the year. You've already developed it. You use it during the year. You develop it in the offseason. So, yeah, that's very, very important.
And there is some chemistry developing here. Now, your fifth starter is Dwayne Bowe, who becomes one of the more interesting discussions, other than Alex Smith, that we could have offensively because Andy Reid and John Dorsey made the decision, a strong decision, to commit to Dwayne Bowe to carry this team forward. What do you see for DB?
You know what? I hearken back to a couple years ago when he had that 15 or 16 touchdowns and how he dealt with things. And I think that's what they see. I feel like he can get back to that. He's had productive years yardage-wise, but the fact is when Coach Reed came in here and when Coach Dorsey or when John Dorsey came in as GM, the stories have been told over and over again, the fact that Dwayne Bowe's excited. He wanted to be here. He let his agent know, we need to get this done. So I like that in him also. I always, up until a couple years ago, I questioned whether he had breakaway speed because he doesn't look like it. But the fact is he does have breakaway speed. We saw that when he had all those touchdowns that one year. He did some good things. That coupled with the fact of being, you know, a 225-pound receiver at 6'2", very physical. You know, you pencil him in right now, Mitch, I think, at the Z, but, you know, you could look at him as the X as well, which will open us up to a new discussion with the other wide receivers. Mm-hmm. But he's somebody that has to step up, I think wants to step up. From when he came here the year after I retired to where he is now, watched him the whole metamorphosis, this is a guy who has matured greatly.
Yeah, big time now. The consistency factor is obvious here. That 15-touchdown season, 11 came in about a month.
Right.
Okay. And we've seen Dwayne kind of go up and down. Concise route running.
Precise.
Mm-hmm. Working with Alex Smith, that 7 yards is 7 yards, not 8.5,
right.
Not 6.5. And this offense that Andy Reid has, there's a lot of slants, skinny posts that are built for Dwayne Bowe, that he's precise. He's got a quarterback now that puts it on the money and in stride. And no one wants to tackle Dwayne Bowe. Run the route concise, catch the ball, and move. The other thing I'll say, I'm excited about him being coached by David Culley.
Right.
Which segues into our wide receiver discussion.
Well, you're right. And, you know, I had a chance to be around Coach Culley my last year with the Pittsburgh Steelers when he was just coming in there. Now, I was released that offseason and went to the New Orleans Saints, but I was around him, and he had tremendous respect. He coached some good ones back there. I'm going back in time. I'm dating myself a little bit, but a Tyler Thigpen, an Ernie Mills. He did a good job with the receiving core there. Has tremendous respect. I think that played, quite honestly, you asked about, you signed Dwayne Bowe and people have some questions and this and that. I think when you've got a coach like Coach Culley, he can sit there and he can work with them, and that goes to the point of signing some other players in the offseason, namely Donnie Avery.
Okay, let's get into it now, the wide receiver core. Again, we're looking at the offense on this edition of Chiefs Live, and where do the Chiefs kind of go from here offensively? There's 45 guys, I believe, on offense on this roster right now, and 13 of them are wide receivers. You mentioned Donnie Avery. John Baldwin comes into this discussion.
Right.
Let's take the wide receiver core and what you see there. And of the 13 now, that's a crowded position. What do you want to see from now through St. Joe into the preseason, into the season?
Well, I want to see what you talked about is the precise route running, because you talked about it. A 7-yard route is a 7-yard route. It's not 8.5, and it's not 6.25. And why that's so important, and sometimes it goes by the wayside a little bit, is sometimes these QBs, they throw to spots. And if they don't have the trust in the receiver to run the concise routes, then the fact is the DB will step in front of them. And most of the times, when a DB starts to step in front on a slant or a skinny post, as a receiver, you've got to stay on your route, and you've got to continue going where you're going. Otherwise, you give up interception. So, again, being precise in what you do with things. I think the Donnie Avery, Jonathan Baldwin battle will be very, very interesting, because I think those are your next two receivers and where they fit in at the X. When I look at Avery and the speed he has, I see him as a Z more than I see him as an X. But, again, you can mix and match to a degree. Jonathan Baldwin, just a couple years out from being the number one pick, certainly I think to a degree probably feels like he has a little bit to prove, and I think Coach Culley will help him immensely. That will be interesting. And then you've got to throw Dexter McCluster into the mix also and what he can do. Used at running back a little bit out of necessity in the past, but I think he's a true slot receiver. But you can do some interesting things with him. We've heard Coach Reed say, I think that maybe he exceeded their expectations of what they thought he could do in terms of what they're looking at. So he's kind of a wild horse as well. And then you've got some of the guys that have come on lately. You've got your Devin Wiley. You've still got Terrence Copper, who's not your everyday receiver. But, again, he was captain on the special teams last year, and that plays into things a lot as well. So those are the guys I see. I think Gilliard they brought in, he'll get a look at things. I'm looking at this also. You've got Bellamy. You've got Newsom. But when it comes down to it, after after Bo, you've got Baldwin, you've got Avery, and you've got McCluster, and after that, you've got a lot of people fighting for those last, I assume, two positions.
Well, let's say, I mean, it's a little early in early May to start talking about a 53-man roster. You keep five, you keep six. You've got to get special teams,
right.
Huge contributions out of your wide receiver position. Coach Tobe wants to be explosive in the special teams game. They look at McCluster and go, can he get back what he did in 2010 with that 94-yard punt return against San Diego that gets your attention? Devin Wiley came in, and that was basically on his resume, right. An 80-yard return for a touchdown at Nebraska, and the same thing against Boise State in the return game. Baldwin has not played teams for
right.
the most part. And these other guys, there's all but Hemingway and
We know Bo hasn't played teams and probably is not going to.
No, but everybody else might have to.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Baldwin
yes.
may be thrust into a role
absolutely.
Where he's going to have to play some teams. And then if Copper, who's the long-tooth veteran here, mm-hmm. has made it because of teams, who's a four-core teams guy. So
right.
It is an interesting discussion, and maybe one of these young guys jump forward.
Well, that's a difference maker. When it comes down to it, if you used to have people of like-minded talents and abilities, you all of a sudden go to special teams. So you're exactly right. And you know, I'm going to tell you right now, you talked about it. Dave Tobe, he's used to having an explosive return game, and then you've got to cover as well, because that makes such a difference for your offense and your defense when you give long fields and you give short fields. So that will be interesting. I think Dexter is the first one you're going to look at from the return side of things. After that, I'm not sure where they go. Wiley, obviously, they're going to look at again, but it's an important year for Wiley. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Now, another real interesting position, and it's been one of the more discussed positions since the draft was completed, and this is, and then we'll take a break. Again, if you joined us a little bit late here, you can just go back and watch the rest of it. But the point is, we're dealing with the offense here, and in succeeding weeks, we're going to talk about defense and special teams as this team goes through rookie minicamp this week, headed for continuing off-season program and then into OTAs, then the mandatory mini camp in June, and of course time in St. Joe for training camp. The tight end position will be one of the most intriguing positions to watch from this day forward. And
right.
we start with rookie mini camp forward, because when Travis Kelce was drafted by this team from the University of Cincinnati, this discussion went right to center stage. What do you see with tight? There's five tight ends on the roster, and there's some intrigue here.
There's a lot. First of all, you had Fasano signed in the offseason, and you thought, okay, now they've taken care of that. So what do they do in the third round? They take Kelce. I like the pick. This is an interesting cat in terms of the fact that Mitch, I want to say a 4.5 40 somewhere in there.
Not
this is a guy
him.
That can maybe a 4.6. I've ever seen in my life, but health was an issue. We've talked about it all day today. Health was an issue with him coming in, and it has been an issue. He came off of the knee injury and did okay, but this is huge for him, because you bring Fasano in, you have Kelce, and then you have Kevin Brock, which we've heard a lot about,
yep.
and then you've got Demetrius Harris, who I'm going to tell you right now, he can hit the three, he can drive, he can make the bank shot. He's, folks, he only played basketball in college, not football, but this is a wave of the future. Basketball players becoming football players. You've seen it a lot in the NFL. In fact, I mean, you have football coaches ask you a lot if you see anybody in basketball that translates over, haven't you?
Not kidding. And when you see what Clawson has done and what Gonzalez has done and what Gates has done, I have scouts, not just ours, but to other teams.
Right.
And I have coaches that go, because I do a lot of college basketball, they go, and they're serious as can be. They're serious.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a guy out there, kind of like this guy, let us know.
Right.
Because honestly, the National Football League is looking for college basketball players that fit the tight end role. Mm-hmm. And Harris, to me, has a lot of intrigue. And that's part of this weekend.
Certainly.
A guy who did not play college football. But he had offers coming out of high school to play college football, but he went to the University of Milwaukee, Wisconsin-Milwaukee, to play basketball. So what do you have here? The guy's 6'5 and about 255, 260. So I mentioned there's intrigue. There's probably the most intrigue with him. Now, I also get asked, and I've mentioned this privately, or get asked publicly and privately, three tight ends? Can you keep three tight ends? I see three tight ends in this offense a lot. But we've said it before. You show big. The
right.
defense has to react to your big lineup. Here mm-hmm. come safeties and backers. But you've got a guy like Travis Kelce who can run every number on the receiving tree.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He can run them all.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's against a safety or a linebacker.
Right.
And the New England Patriots are having the seminar on this, basically. But I could see the Chiefs showing big and still running deep routes and hitting big plays out of a three tight end set.
Well, you bring up the perfect fact, very astute in the fact of the NFL is about matchups and how you match up against people, what type of people you put on the field, and what you force them to do, and then how many options you have. And when you can put, like you said, a big package on the field, and you could run out of that, but then you could pass out of it as well. Now you've got some mismatches. You've got to pick your poison, so to speak. That's what you like in the Kansas City Chiefs offense, if they can do things like that. The fact is, Fasano can block. Kelce can block adequately, but they can catch. They've got hands. They're a threat there. Kelce, really, really, because of the, for a tight end, inordinate speed, does a nice job there. So that's going to be an interesting situation. But, again, you want to get them on the NFL football field, see how they perform against NFL talent. But that starts this weekend.
It starts right away, particularly with watching Kelce and watching Demetrius Harris. But the tight end discussion also kind of morphs into another position on the offense, and that is fullback, which has been there's been a lot of questions about that. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. We're going to now look into the offensive backfield and see what the Chiefs possibly have up their sleeves. And could you have two fullbacks on this roster, and how competitive will fullback be starting from tomorrow on? We'll discuss that when we come back on this edition, this offensive edition of Chiefs Live.
Just because it's springtime doesn't mean you have to miss out on football. That's right, there's no offseason for Chiefs fans, and that's why there's a show for those who want to stay close to their favorite team all year long. It's Red and Gold. Red and Gold will take you around town, Arrowhead, and into the lives of players and coaches like no other show. Check local listings for dates and times. It's Red and Gold.
Corona Light presents Kenny Chesney's No Shoes Nation Tour. Starring Kenny Chesney. And Eric Church. Eli Young Band. And introducing Casey Musgraves. Saturday, June 15th at Arrowhead Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Available at all Ticketmaster ticket outlets. Kenny Chesney and friends in concert.
Love the Chiefs? Join us. Stay connected and join the growing communities of the Chiefs Kingdom. There's so many ways. Twitter keeps you up to date on all things Chiefs.
They're not going to catch it.
Back of the game.
Eric Johnson on a linebacker blitz.
Facebook lets you respond and react to fellow fans. And Instagram takes you inside with some of the best images of the Kingdom. Stay connected to win some sweet prizes. Join in and be a part of your Chiefs 365.
Called for it, you're getting it. You're getting game day taste. We're at the ninth level, 12 stories or whatever we are above, the Arrowhead Stadium field with Kendall Gammon and I'm Mitch Holtis. This is our offensive edition of Chiefs Live. And I love all of you, particularly kind of the delayed reaction of some of these, because there will be like a tweet 6 days later going, hey, I just watched Chiefs Live for the fourth time. hey, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? Well, we're talking blah, blah, blah offense here. And before the break, we talked about tight end and how intriguing it is starting tomorrow when the rookies get on the field and guys like Kelce and Demetrius Harris get out there. Fullback also enters this discussion because last year this team was essentially without a fullback. They picked up Patrick DeMarco later, who we like, but now he's been cut. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, you've got to cut. When the fullbacks walk into the room, the chairs are full. And what do you see out of the fullback position?
You know, it's interesting because you trade for Anthony Sherman. You brought in D'Imperio in the offseason. Then, of course, you draft Braden Wilson out of K-State from your hometown, by the way. Just thought we'd throw that in. Our boys' quote is coming here in a while.
Sure.
But it's interesting because you've got a completely different dynamic than you had last year. And certainly one guy that I would think would be pretty happy is one Jamal Charles, because if you've got guys like that, I mean, you look at Braden Wilson, 6'3", 256. That's a guy. That's a thumper. That's a guy that can go take on the run-stopping linebacker and do quite a bit of stuff. So it'll be interesting. Can you keep three? Probably not. Can you keep two? Most people don't think so. I'm of the opinion, but yeah, that's a possibility, because it's going to come down, I think, to versatility. What do you bring to the offense? What can you do? And then, more importantly, we talked about earlier, is what do you special teams-wise? Sherman comes over from the Cardinals. He was a special teams guru over there, did a lot of different things. I have no doubt that played something into it. So it will be interesting, and that's going to be, you know, when we're doing our picks, I guess, when we sit down and evaluate who makes the team, how many position-wise, that's when you start. And we're almost going to have to look at tight end and fullback together and try to mix and match, because I'm not so certain that Braden couldn't line up with the line and do some things for you also. So there's some versatility there as well.
Yeah, Wilson's kind of seems to be a H-back hybrid guy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take Sherman first, because it comes with some expense. You traded Javier Arenas to get this guy. This wasn't a draft pick. It's Sherman. And the guy played 243 snaps.
Right.
Didn't carry the ball at all, really, but a good lead blocker, solid guy. But it did give an indication, I think, to everybody in the Chiefs kingdom what Andy Reid was thinking and Doug Peterson with this offense in getting that kind of guy and then also drafting Braden Wilson. But Sherman was a good soldier. He was a good player for the Arizona Cardinals, very steady, and you mentioned a good special teams contributor. So there's some interest there to see what Sherman can bring to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, you're right, and you talked about it, Mitch, in terms of what are they thinking. Well, are they thinking, okay, you look at it last year, we had a good running attack, but we turned the ball over. If we simply hold on to the ball this year and continue that running attack and can thump people, you've got a chance to do some good things on the ground and complement that with a pass game, again, holding on to the ball. I mean, that could be their thought process. Certainly, you look at the tight ends that are on here, because it's not unheard of that you couldn't keep those three tight ends with Mo Ioki as well, certainly, and what I expect, and still have two tight ends. And most people, that sounds kind of weird to them, but again, it goes to the matchups and what they can do and what the coaches and coaching staff is thinking, I think. We won't really get a sense of that until we get into the preseason games.
Okay, here comes your Our Boys quote. Yes, it is a New York Times bestseller, but it's a must-read if you're a football fan or a Chiefs Kingdom fan, now particularly since Braden Wilson's on this team, because Joe Drape did a phenomenal job of talking about the culture in a town, yes, it's my hometown, a town of 2,000 people that had the nation's longest winning streak at 79 straight wins, and Braden Wilson never lost a game as a high school football player. But then he goes to K-State and becomes the plow horse for both Daniel Thomas, now with the Miami Dolphins, and for Colin Klein, now with the Houston Texans. And he's got a skill set where he was an all-state basketball player that he can catch passes. When Andy Reid called him the best blocking fullback, one of the best blockers in this, maybe the best fullback in this draft, it does get your attention. But it'll be exciting to watch this guy, starting the next couple of days, to watch Braden Wilson, because it's not too big for him, even though he's from small-town Kansas.
And I pull two things out of what you just said. Number one, he's used to winning. He expects to win. I like about it. I like that. We talked about it with Nico, the linebacker out of Alabama. I tweeted that right out. This guy expects to win. That's the same thing with Braden going back to high school and then into college with K-State, them having some great years. And then the other thing you said that I think stands out to me is the fact that this was a running back in high school who averaged 9-10 yards a pop when he ran the ball, ran it all the time. He goes to K-State. He completely changes his stripes, does what the coaches ask of him. It's a guy who's, again, not selfish. He's doing whatever it makes sense to help the team win. That's a good type of person to have in the locker room. I've not met him yet, and just from being around you, this is a guy that I think can really influence a locker room very, very much, even as a rookie.
I know I sound like a 10 evangelist, but I'm going to say it again. When we talked before the break about tight end and now about the fullback, I'm going to talk about it until the first game and into the first game, and it's this color, and that's the red zone. These fullbacks and tight ends, once the team gets inside the 20, gets inside the 10, there are times in this league you just have to thump folks.
Right.
The Chiefs have not done it for a long time, since Tony Richardson. And they've got to be better. They've been dismal in the red zone. So this team can make a marked improvement if they hang on to the ball, efficient, have explosive plays, but the red zone becomes, to me, the biggest discussion going into St. Joe and into the preseason.
Well, you're right. Aside from turnover ratio in the NFL, the biggest thing is the red zone.
Woeful.
How often do you score inside there? And again, with a back like Jamaal Charles, if you get somebody that's thumping in front of him, if you just get him to the line of scrimmage untouched, you're getting 4 or 5 yards guaranteed. And after that, he may do some different things because of the skill set he has, which is very, very elusive and not with many people in the NFL. He's a special player, but you've got to get him running and going. And this fullback charge, this fullback look where they're showing the guys and we're going to have this competition, it's going to be fun to watch because it tells me also that, like you said, you're going to feature Jamaal as much as you can.
Well, competition is going to be also paramount in the offensive line. Let's go there because this now becomes another much-discussed area. We've already talked about Brandon Albert and Eric Fisher, so let's take them out of the equation. If you joined us again late, you just go back and watch this thing and talk about it 6 days later on Twitter. I like that because it's the gift that keeps on giving. It's like a good meal. Let's talk about the rest of the offensive line here, and let's take the guard position and how competitive this looks. Because you've got young guys here.
Right.
You got Rodney Hudson coming back from the
yep.
injury. Let's take the interior three guys. Let's take the two guards in the center. What's going on there?
Well, it's interesting. You go back to last year. Hudson hurts his knee, so you have Lilja, who moves over from left guard to center. Now Jeff Allen goes to left guard as a rookie. You've got Asamoah, who's manned that position at the right guard spot for the last 2 years. A lot of different aspects went in last year, different players. Of course, Lilja right now is gone, although there's been some talk. Hudson coming off of a knee injury. Does everybody expect him to start? Yeah, I expect him to start, but the fact is, until you see him out there, until you see him doing it, you don't know what's going on with that side of it. You had a rookie last year playing the left guard spot. All this would probably be a little bit more set if you didn't have Jeff Swartz come into the picture. This is a guy the Chiefs picked up from Minnesota. I like this guy. He can do a lot of different things. He started at guard in the league. He started at tackle in the league. He was considered a great pick for Minnesota last year. I really don't think they wanted to lose him this year. That was huge to me because he can be a swingman. If he's not starting, he can be a swingman at guard or tackle. But I think he's going to push on one side or the other guard-wise. I think probably more of the battle is your left guard side with Jeff Allen. But the fact is, Coach Reed has talked about it. John Dorsey has talked about it. Competition. Competition makes people better. Bringing him in, I think you've got competition to a degree at all three spots.
What's interesting here is if you do have three tight ends and two fullbacks, which you can do,
mm-hmm.
particularly if they're teams players, and all five of those guys I think could contribute on special teams, at least three of the five, you're probably going to have no more than 8 offensive linemen. Schwartz comes into play here because he becomes a guard-tackle combo. 8/9.
Right.
We didn't mention Donald Stevenson.
Right.
He becomes this is a very interesting offseason for him, very important training camp to me for him, particularly when they get to St. Joe and get the pads on. Then there's Eric Cush, who I'm interesting to see here the next couple of days, a kid out of Division II, California, PA.
Right.
The staff thinks a lot of him. But when you're 8/9, how important is it to have a guy that can play guard center? Tackle guard like Schwartz.
Makes all the difference in the world. Again, very astute is the fact that you've got to have somebody because there's going to be a lot of game days where you'd prefer just to suit up 7 as opposed to 8. You're taking a little bit of a chance, but if you've got a swing guy that can play the interior 3 and you've got another guy that can back up the tackle, you can get away with it. Schwartz is very, very valuable in this league because of the fact that he can play guard and tackle on both sides, and I'm not so certain that he couldn't play center. So he is huge. If he's not starting, he's your swing guy like you talk about it. You talk about the center position. Of course, Rodney Hudson, you're looking to him to come back. But behind him, you've got Lucas Patterson, which people were high on last year. I liked him. I think he's going to stick in this league somewhere, sometime. His time may not be yet, but he goes down with an injury last year, or else he would have stepped in and got some valuable playing time. But you've got him. You've got Cush, which they like a lot. You hear Coach Reed, you hear Dorsey talk about the first two steps of the center and how important that is, because you're trying to get one side or the other. You're trying to outflank them, because after you get that, you've only got to hold them for a split second, because the ball's getting outside and around you. And if he's quick like that and can do some things, and again, a Division II guy, which I like, could have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to prove some things, that's huge as well. I think the center position is going to be one that not as many people pay attention to during the training camp, but one of the most important ones, because the first guy to touch the ball each and every play is the center.
Chiefs have had some of the best in the history of the game. And Rodney Hudson, a very difficult injury to come back from. We'll see how he does, and particularly when the pads get on and the first starts flying. Schwartz is interesting, too, because his brother also plays in the league. It's the first pair of Jewish brothers to play in the National Football League since the 30s. So some interesting, just a little nugget there for you to chew on. Now, we talked about Jamal Charles. We talked about Alex Smith. But there is a discussion here on who backs these guys off. Let's take the quarterback position. The Chiefs invest some dollars in going after Chase Daniel, who is an impressive guy. You can see why Drew Brees liked him so much in New Orleans. You can see why Missouri was so good in football when it was at Mizzou. The guy, to me, could be governor of Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and Iowa all at the same time. It means he could be president of the United States. But let's look at this backup quarterback role, because the Stanzi Nation is still out there. He's still got his followers. And, yes, you find out on Twitter, they want to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then Tyler Bray becomes an undrafted free agent, and some thought he could be as high as a third or second round pick.
Right. You basically got an extra draft pick when you got Bray. Now, there's certainly some things that pushed him down. They're not sure about his decision making sometimes, not sure about his maturity side of things. But the fact is, he has the intangibles as far as the arm strength and being able to do everything that a QB needs to do at this level. That will be interesting, because Stanzi has not played in a regular season game, hasn't played a lot of preseason. So that competition for the third QB will be fun to watch as well. Not as important to a degree, but very, very much fun, because, again, Alex Smith is a starter. Chase Daniel is your backup. And, again, that position has been shored up from where we were at last year, which is huge. But that will be a fun one to watch also.
And I've done the empirical research, and I'll have to update it again. And I don't care if it's Alex Smith or whomever your starting quarterback is, it's over half the time that backup quarterback.
Right.
And to me, the definition of a quarterback is, of a backup quarterback, he's got to win at least a game for you to have that special season. And you see that happen time and time again. It's like the old movie Air Force One, all right? The Raiders, the Chargers, and the Broncos all want to hijack the plane. And so somebody's going to have to run it. This backup role is more important than holding a clipboard and giving suggestions to Alex Smith.
There's no question about it. For the most part, like you say, QBs don't get through the season all the time completely healthy, and you've got to step in a game or two. That's just how the NFL is. And I think that's why you saw some dollars invested in Chase Daniel, because this is a guy who I think is, quite honestly, mature beyond his years, has been the understudy of somebody who's going to be in the Hall of Fame probably someday. In Drew Brees, so I like it. And again, he comes from a winning attitude as well. I think he can be a force in the locker room, even as a backup QB, and that's huge.
It is. Get off my plane is the line from Air Force One. Netflix is a great thing, by the way. Okay, we talked about Jamal Charles. We were both excited, although it's an interesting pick when Nile Davis was chosen by the Kansas City Chiefs in the third round of the 2013 NFL draft, because both of us said there has to be a power back compliment to Jamal Charles. Go back to my red zone discussion, for sure. But also on other scrimmage downs outside of the red zone, backup running back. And if you're going to keep three tights, two fullbacks, under that assumption, you see like three running backs max.
Right. Certainly.
What are you seeing?
Well, you know what? You got Sean Drone and Cyrus Gray from last year. And what it tells me is they're not completely sold. Not that maybe they couldn't prove themselves in camp, but they weren't completely sold on it yet to go out and get a Nile Davis. This is a guy from Arkansas. When you look at him, sophomore year, has a breakout year, does some unbelievable things, has issues his junior year injury-wise, comes back his senior year. You've got a lot of turmoil going on at Arkansas. They lose the QB. They've just a lot of different things going on. He doesn't have the breakout year. I would say for the pick that he was at, the value you got was very, very great. Now, he does have some injury issues, the ankles and whatnot. So just like anybody in the league, you have to stay healthy. But if he can't stay healthy at 5'10", you know, 225 pounds, to me, that's the prototypical size for a running back, because you're low to the ground, you've got good leverage, you're built a little bit like a bowling ball, and you've got that brute strength that I like. He's a nifty runner. He's a fast runner. That's really what bolted him as well. He had a nice 40 time. That's huge. When you look at what he could do possibly if he were up there, or Sean Drone or Cyrus Gray, somebody's got to take some carries off of Jamaal Charles. It's just that simple. You've got to keep him healthy, and I think taking two or three carries away from him is okay, because you benefit in the long run taking those carries away by getting more yards on the times that he does touch the ball. So I think it's huge. That's a huge position battle to watch in the preseason going in, because that's going to make a difference in the Chiefs' season.
Not sure how much we'll see Nile Davis on the field here in the spring and summer, because of the injury situation, mm-hmm. they handle it with his physical issues. But for every one of these rookies, you hand them the series and differential equation syllabus and the calculus syllabus and go, all right, here we go. And that starts immediately for them to get as integrated as they quickly as they can with the playbook on the offensive side of the ball. So they hit the ground running to the rest of the summer. And when they get to St. Joe, man, it's not where their head's bouncing off the wall. And right. I've talked to Andy Reid about that and how important that is, you know, starting right now for these guys. Cyrus Gray, Sean Drone, whomever that third running back is going to be, has got to be a special teams dynamo.
Right.
For Dave Tobe to have the kind of teams he had in Chicago, that third running back has got to be awesome.
He's got to be a four-core.
Four-core.
Certainly.
Tackler, runner, blocker, everything. He's got to be basically a Terrence Copper type.
You're exactly right, and that's what you've got to have for him. That, as a backup, I mean, and that's the interesting thing that people don't always see in the NFL, is these guys that come into the NFL, you don't get to the NFL because you weren't a star and you weren't great in college. And normally, if you were really getting it done in college, you weren't always involved in special teams. So it's a mindset also. And I've seen a lot of people who probably could have made the team had they had a little bit different mindset and understood how important it was. But in their minds, they're a running back. They're a wide receiver. They don't play special teams. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, that's a third of the game. Special teams has to be on each and every week. Defensively, offensively, you're gonna ebb and flow a little bit week to week. But special teams has to be your one constant. It's important. Dave Tobe will make sure that people understand how important it is. It's a big deal. I'm looking forward to seeing it, because that's, to me, an area that the Chiefs can certainly improve on as well.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I'm probably most excited about over the next several days, and really over the next several weeks, is this coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have been around them some. We're going to be around them a lot more as the days and months progress. But it's almost like you're going into a strong MBA program. These guys are teachers. They've done it. They've done it before. They've written a book on it many times.
Right.
And so to see their teaching, their impact, their enthusiasm. Andy Reid's talked about being reborn and ready to go. But I'm starting to see it up and down the line with this coaching staff. This is a legitimate NFL coaching staff, and to see them work, I'm ready to see it.
It's fun to see. I go to my former position as far as the O-line side of things and special teams. Of course, we've talked about Dave Tobe and what he did up in Chicago. You've got Andy Heck in here, Eugene Chung doing a great job. It starts with Coach Andy Reid, and I had a moment this week to reconnect with a former special teams coach of mine, Bobby April, about some other things. It was just the other day. And the one thing we talked about was Coach Reid and how good a person he is, how great a ball coach he is, how excited he is to be in Kansas City, and how much respect he had as a head coach, or as he had as an assistant coach for Coach Reid. Now, of course, Bobby's in Oakland now, so I won't be talking to him anymore, so don't worry. We're done. But all the same, that's the type of respect that Andy has, and he's assembled the type of coaching staff that's really going to be exciting, going to work with the players. You've seen all the great tape on kcchiefs.com, mic'd up of these guys. They're teachers. Yeah. and that's great. Just because you get in the NFL doesn't mean you're too high up to learn. You can always learn. They're ball coaches. That's exciting.
I like Bobby April. I've always respected him and liked him, but now he's trying to hijack Air Force
One.
I'm sorry, Bobby. Get off my plane. I love Andy Reid. He gives you that CEO feeling every time you meet him. Pleasant guy, but driven guy, but you feel the CEO, the it factor. Andy Reid's got it. Over the next several days, you'll see a lot of chatter here on KCChiefs.com about the rookie minicamp. Yep, we're all excited to see not only the draftees, but the free agents, and a lot of these intriguing position battles on offense that will go all the way up to the opening game when this team gets on the plane and heads to play the Jacksonville Jaguars. He is the snapper, Kendall Gammon, Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs. Thank you for joining us on this edition of Chiefs Live.